It's Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. Once again, we're back with a draft show. It's the best podcast about the Green Bay Packers that you can listen to on iTunes or whatever other podcast services out there. I don't know what the heck they are. My name's Mike Fleischman, and with me, as always, once again, it's Matt Mellemsetter. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I am really, really good. It's hot in Chicago.
It's hot.
We are down here in the loop in the beautiful studios of Radio DePaul Sports at State and Jackson in One DePaul Central. There's alarms going off. It's a hectic day.
This is our second time trying to take this episode. We got interrupted the first time.
We're giving it a second go, and I've got my first startup question. It might be an honest question, but it might turn into a bit.
Okay.
Who's your favorite Chicago Bears quarterback?
Ooh, favorite Chicago Bears quarterback. Fond memories of Jay Cutler. Lots of fond memories of Jay Cutler. I love Jay Cutler.
The meme potential is so high potential. With him.
Here's the thing. He's the first Chicago Bears quarterback that's been around since kind of the meme era entered its golden age. And so there's a lot of love for Jay Cutler coming from the meme side of Matt Mellemsetter. From the childlike wonder of my heart, Rex Grossman will always hold a special place in my heart.
Oh, Rexy.
Roll Rexy and Kyle Orton will always hold a special place in my heart.
Kyle Orton is a real good choice for that. I'm older. I'm a Jim McMahon guy.
Sure.
I'm also a Jimmy Clausen.
Man, I did forget about Jimmy Clausen. He's on my fantasy football team.
Pickles.
He's just terrible.
Pickles. Clausen had a lot going for him, from like some unfortunate looks back in his younger days to the nickname Pickles, which is highly good.
That's so funny. It's 100% based off of Tommy Pickles, right? I think he looks like a little rugrat.
His last name is the name of a brand of pickles, Clausen.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. I think he looks like a Tommy Pickles, grown up Tommy Pickles.
Pickles Clausen. I have this thing I go through where there have been so many of these Bears quarterbacks that are just like Duff McCougal and like Bloke Borfen and, you know, all these guys you've never heard of before.
Jimmy Clausen is 1-13 in his career as a starting quarterback. He's bad.
And it just there's so many of these guys, and Bear fans will be like, you know, if we had only stuck with Norton Nodelbacker for just another three games, he would have lost all three of them, huh?
That's it.
I can't despise the Bears.
Do you remember when Jimmy Clausen was drafted? I can't despise the Bears either, just because they're such a terrible team year in and year out. When they're good, I'm sure I'll hate them, but they just haven't been good or a threat in so long that they're just kind of like they've become very similar to the Detroit Lions until like 2 years ago.
Yeah, the Vikings, I can be more unified. I have this grudging respect for Minnesota, but the Bears.
Hate Minnesota. No respect for Minnesota.
Oh, Mike Zimmer's a good coach.
Sure, Mike Zimmer's great. I don't...
Their personnel moves are sharp right now.
They have a smart front office. I don't like them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... It's a grudging respect. And, you know, the grudging part is as important to that as the respect part. Oh, geez, the Bears, though. It's so comical because these great football players show up on the Bears and they get surrounded by nobody.
Mediocrity.
Matt Forte, Jordan Howard. These guys are fantastic. Akeem Hicks is a fantastic player. And, like, they don't have wide receivers. Like, they do not have let alone, like, deux or trois. It's, like, all right, you have a great, like, top five NFL running back, and you've surrounded him with zero human beings?
Yep.
Good idea.
They made a good addition with Allen Robinson this offseason, and they picked up I forget the name of the wide receiver they drafted. They got a wide receiver, I believe, in the second round, which I think was a good value. But they've always limited Trubisky, at least since he's come in, and never surrounded their running backs with anyone good. They've had... It seems like as long as I can remember, the Bears have had a decent running game, but just never added a second dimension to that offense.
Yeah, when I started this show as a radio show, I was talking with Charlie Bevins, who was one of my first guests, and I was asking him because he was lobbying for Trubisky, and this was this was back when they were starting that like golem that whose name I can't remember, despite the fact that he's like all neck and no one else looks like him in the world.
Matt Barkley?
Oh no! Who's the huge starting quarterback from this year? Now I have to. Hi, I'm a podcast host.
Anthony Miller is the wide receiver that they took in the third round.
But he's just the most forgettable human being. He came up from Tampa Bay. They paid him a bunch of money. Mike Glennon.
You're absolutely right. He does look like all.
He who does not have a name in my mind.
Well, no, it's totally okay that you forgot Mike Glennon's name because he's not worth remembering.
Yeah,
if your brain can clear out space,
sure.
If your brain can make space for like one new like way to make coffee, eliminate Mike Glennon.
Yeah.
Save the how to make coffee in your brain. Eliminate Mike Glennon. You can
want to
that.
Format C colon.
Mike Glennon.
Yeah, Mike Glennon is out of here. But he was making the case for Trubisky right away, and that seemed to have been the right idea. I was asking him in return, though, like, who helps Trubisky win games? Like, who helps Trubisky become an NFL player this year? And last year, the answer was, oh, absolutely nobody for no reason at all. This year, okay, Allen Robinson helps him out, and that there's at least a football player or two beyond just Jordan Howard, and of course they've got Tariq Cohen now, who is
pretty darn good.
Is pretty darn good. So they're at least like they have built the lower section of their rebuild. There's somebody now instead of nobody, which is a nice addition. This is a draft show, so we have to get into the Green Bay Packers draft because we're just rambling about the Chicago Bears right now.
I don't like talking about
the
Chicago Bears.
Sorry, Bears fans. Packers draft was not exactly what we expected. I know you and I were sitting here a week ago talking about previewing the draft. We had a list of guys that we thought were going in the first round. And then Gutekunst used his first draft to really, really shake the dice.
Yeah.
And make some moves, trading out of the first round, it seemed at first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, trading back from 14 to 27 and then trading right back up to 18.
And in the process of this, they managed to land themselves a first round pick next year from the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
Which is, ooh, that's spicy.
Yeah, that's a great move. I was doing a live show with Charlie Bevins here at the station for Radio DePaul Sports as the draft was happening, and I remember when I saw that we had traded away 14th to New Orleans Saints, I had to mute the microphones because I was so upset. And then, you know, 3 minutes later, we're back on the clock at 18, taking Jaire Alexander, which we'll get into in a minute. Quite the move.
Yeah, that was a very, very prescient move. And first round NFL draft picks don't get handed to you very often.
Absolutely not.
So for the New Orleans Saints, this has to be we were again discussing this. This has to be a discussion of what they think Marcus Davenport means for them this season.
Yeah.
Because 39 years old, Drew Brees, he's got I think one of the top up-and-coming running backs in Alvin Kamara. They've already got some playmakers on defense. They've made some free agent signings. They think that Marcus Davenport takes them to the Super Bowl.
They have to. Otherwise, this move doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I Marcus Davenport is such a raw, athletic, promising specimen of an athlete. Just a crazy, long, powerful man. But I it's going to take a few years for that pass rush to develop, and I just don't know if it's the right move. But hey, it's a good move for us.
It absolutely is, and we will of course have to watch. I know I'll be thinking next year, like, who does that first round pick from New Orleans turn into when we get to it? And New Orleans has to be thinking that Drew Brees doesn't play until he's 42. So they have to be thinking that there's got to be someone on their radar right away to play quarterback for them. It's a fun situation, and the Packers have a first-round pick next year, and there's certainly nothing stopping New Orleans from not having the kind of season that they think they're going to have behind a 39-year-old starting quarterback and a a generally unproven running back, so this very well could be a top 15 first round pick next year.
Yeah, I would see no reason that it could not even be top 10. I mean, to bet this much on the arm of a 39 going on 40-year-old Drew Brees, while he is one of the best quarterbacks in the league over the last decade or so, it is, guys don't really make it over 39, 40 very consistently. And we could see a major fall off, and it could be a golden goose egg in the lap of the Green Bay Packers.
So at 18, the Packers find Jaire Alexander out of Louisville.
Yeah.
And we did not mention Jaire Alexander at all because we are the draft prognosticators that you, the people, rely on.
Yes, yes.
So Matt Melvsetter, Jaire Alexander at 18.
I thought a pretty good pick. I was expecting him to go ahead of this. I know we did last time. We also talked about Josh Jackson going with our 14th pick, and we'll get into that later. But Jaire Alexander, really darn good cornerback, will most likely play in the slot based on our second round selection. But he is tough as nails. I saw a stat about him earlier today that in 148 coverage snaps last season, 148 coverage snaps, he only gave up three completions past the line of scrimmage.
Ooh.
Ooh. That's good. Okay. I like that. I like that.
Another note on Alexander, he was the team's top punt returner.
Yes.
Which special teams returners has been a real question.
Yeah, I would say we've bombed.
As to who's going to do that.
Our punt returners have really bombed lately.
Yeah, hey. there hasn't been a hey Trevor Davis.
Hey Trevor,
all charges are dropped against Trevor Davis, by the way. Just in case you were wondering,
no charges.
Yeah, no charges. No charges pressed on Trevor Davis. So again, hi Trevor. It's Mike Fleischman with Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. Don't say the dumb stuff. So a top punt returner. Started all 13 games, 5 interceptions last year. He is a legitimate cornerback, legitimate first round pick, and now a Green Bay Packer. And the secondary stocking just continued right on from there.
Yes, immediately.
And this is a guy that that I thought was going to be the Packers' pick at 14 was Josh Jackson, and he's still available at 45 in the second round. Do you have any idea how Josh Jackson ended up that far down? Because every mock draft that I saw had him in the top 20.
I have really no idea. I think other than the fact that no draft people know what they're talking about. As much as I like to think that I know what I'm talking about, that we know what we're talking about, it's just kind of a shot in the dark sometimes. And I guess Josh Jackson was that shot in the dark. He didn't fit on teams. He didn't fit on teams' radars. He's 6'3". He's long. He's got great ball skills. I would have been happy with this pick at 14. And I'm ecstatic to get him at 45.
Scouting report from CBSSports.com right here uses a great three-word phrase that I'm going to repeat now. Decently fluid hips.
Hmm. Glad to hear he's got those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dancing with the Stars. Look out for Josh Jackson.
Give him a call. He'll maybe finish like halfway through. They're not the best hips. Apparently.
I mean, he's got decently fluid hips.
They're not like the most fluid, so he's not gonna wreck it like when you guys do the salsa episode. But
they're not
like
water, they're like jello.
Mm, that's a good one.
Decently fluid hips.
At least it's not like pudding. And then pudding hips.
Oh, pudding hips.
Josh Jackson got some of them pudding hips.
it's like a comedy bluegrass song. that one was 87 pickup truck ode to my mom. Next one's pudding hips.
To my wife.
Wow, I shouldn't. We're doing improv comedy here on Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. Because we're very serious people who do a very serious work here. So first two draft picks are both cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. Alexander, not quite as large as Josh Jackson at 6'1", but both these guys, they talk about their ability to close to the ball carrier.
Yeah.
Which to me is so important, especially after watching guys like Randall and Rollins not make those reads and not make those closes, guys who are aggressive on that close. I think it's important not only because, hey, you have to be good at that to be good at cornerback, but we've talked a bit already about the play style of guys like HaHa Clinton Dix, who play very deep and very safe. Mm-hmm. And you got the feeling that Clinton Dix was always hedging his bets because the guys in, he needed to be so far back because he didn't trust the guys in front of him.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit more quicker contact and a little bit less of those, like, guys catching the ball coming across the field with no one within 3 yards of him. Mm-hmm. If those situations start to stop happening.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what we can pray for, is because it's the crossing routes and the underneath routes and the curl routes and stuff that killed us. It was those mid-range 5 to 10 yard intermediate throws that's what zapped our defense every single game. And to have guys that are quick as heck. I mean, Jackson, I think, ran a 4.6. But I believe, no, I'm thinking of, I think, Jamon Moore when I talk about that. But Jackson, I believe, ran a 4.48, and I think Jair Alexander ran a 4.38. These are fast, quick guys. They're going to be able to close down on anybody that catches the ball.
And another thing that's going to help crossing routes and short passes, which ate Green Bay alive last year, is a pass rush.
Yes.
Which, that's my transition to the 88th pick of the draft. It's Oren Burks. Out of Vandy, 6'3", 233. Mm-hmm. Talk about fast people coming in to the Green Bay Packers. Oren Burks is very fast, and it's a guy who wasn't, again, on my radar. I'm not the draft expert. I'm just a guy in a shirt. But, we're expecting a pass rusher, so I don't know if you've got more of a breakdown on Oren Burks than I do.
I do have more of a breakdown on Oren Burks. Oren Burks started his first two seasons at Vanderbilt. He played at safety. He started at safety his freshman and sophomore year. In his junior year, he transitioned to outside linebacker, kind of played a hybrid safety linebacker, very similar to how we used Josh Jones last year and how we used Morgan Burnett last year. Burks kind of figures as more of a will side, weak side, outside linebacker, not much of a pass rusher, but more of a sideline to sideline, all the time tackler. Maybe we'll see him play a little bit of inside backer, kind of in Jake Ryan's role, but I think most likely we'll see him kind of as an outside linebacker, coverage linebacker type guy.
See, that's interesting, because I did hear him talked about in the context of, like, this guy's going to be a pass rusher. He's going to be able to get upfield very quickly.
He's fast. So there's absolutely the possibility they'll use him as a pass rusher. But at Vanderbilt, he was primarily a coverage guy.
Okay, then that is a little bit of a departure, because mm-hmm. You were definitely feeling like, all right, this team needs to take cornerbacks and pass rushers. And the idea of another sort of coverage linebacker mm-hmm. wasn't quite in the cards. But when you look at what the Packers have at linebacker right now, Martinez in the middle is very good at covering space. But the guys on the outside edge are frequently sold out to the pass rush, or they're Nick Perry,
yeah,
which is to say not fast.
Yeah.
Oren Burks offers you a different bit of a flavor there, mm-hmm. maybe on the other side of the field, away from Martinez,
yeah.
and able to cover ground sideline to sideline. This will help them out with what they want to do, especially if they're going to trust their front to put pressure on the quarterback right now, which through free agency and the addition of Wilkerson, I think they can trust that right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I would hope that we can trust our defensive line. What I think Burks brings to the table big time is his ability to cover big tight ends and quick slot receivers. He runs like a 4.4, and he's also, like, I think you said, he was 6'3". He's a big, huge dude that's going to be able to cover a defense's biggest guys. And that's something we've always had trouble with.
Yeah, and just the way that tight ends are now wide receivers.
Yeah, Jimmy Graham is a great example of that. He's just a giant slot wide receiver.
And the way that you get, like, that the old nickel cornerback, mm-hmm. the guy who's 5'9" and 178,
yeah,
soaking wet, like that guy, Jimmy Graham, laugh at that man.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So this kind of player, a converted safety, a guy who starts as a coverage man, and then throughout the course of growing up, become gigantic.
Yeah, become very big man.
Become big. That's a different dimension of football player, and this game gets bigger and faster every year.
Bigger, faster, and more dangerous every year we play.
So the first three picks are all defensive picks. Mm-hmm. None of them are down linemen. They're all in the secondary and in the linebacking core, which is the biggest areas of need for Green Bay. They need to be able to slow teams down. They need to be able to take the ball away a little bit more. And then the Packers turn to offense. In the fourth round, they pick Jamon Moore out of Mizzou, another 6'3 guy. Height, speed, verticality, very strong, very athletic. There's questions as to whether or not he's actually a good wide receiver or if he's just a great athlete who feasted in college. But if there's any team that I think has shown that they develop wide receivers, Green Bay seems to do that. They seem to really enjoy taking on projects at wide receiver, whether it's a guy like Davante Adams who has a bunch of physical skills but maybe isn't the best route runner and turn him into a very mm-hmm. disciplined route runner, or guys like Geronimo Allison who are completely undrafted. So a fourth round draft pick in Jamon Moore, they have to think that they can get this guy in their system and start having things make sense for him quickly.
Yeah, he's got all the tools in the world to make it happen. It's a guy who, when I watch him play, reminds me a lot of Davante Adams. He played in Josh Heupel's Mizzou system, which is a spread system which focuses most of their passing to one side of the field. And he also played in the SEC, so he's playing against top level talent. Playing in a weird spread system, which really limited his route tree when he was allowed to run kind of more complex double moves, double cuts, stuff like that. He looked really good. It's just that Heupel's system, Aberdeen, South Dakota guy, actually, where I'm from, was so focused on one side of the field. It was a lot of comeback routes, a lot of flood concepts, stuff like that.
And this is not, you know, the youngest, greenest guy out there.
Yeah.
He redshirted in 2013. So has had a long college career and is coming into this with four full seasons of football at Missouri after that redshirt, has played 14, 15, 16, and 17.
Wow.
Through college. So that's a lot of time to get a good look at this guy. The final two seasons were both 1,000-yard seasons, 8 touchdowns in 16, 10 touchdowns in 17. So, yeah, they know what they're getting here with Jamon Moore. He's not so much of a risk as in, like, will he become a football player? It's more of a risk as that, is he an NFL football mm-hmm. player?
Yeah, they've got all the tape in the world on him. He played in the SEC. Those are 1,000-yard, 10 touchdown seasons playing against Alabama and SEC teams. I mean, he can produce with subpar to average quarterback play. I'm excited to see what he can do with Aaron Rodgers.
So the next pick is the move up from Cleveland in the Randall Kaiser trade. Mm-hmm. And in that, they get Cole Madison, a tackle out of Washington State. Looks like the prototypical Packers tackle draft pick mm-hmm. in that he's 6'5", he's 313. They say the scouting report on him is that he is not as strong or as powerful as you need a tackle to be. And I would just, I would immediately say, like, hey, that's exactly what I heard about David Bakhtiari.
Yep. Yeah, the word is supposedly that he will try to be a guard initially. He entered college as a tight end, so he's exactly that. He's a quick, athletic, not mega strong guy, but he's a big, quick, fast guy. It's always fun to have some hard acceleration off the offensive line.
And you have to think that this team is wondering if they need to have a new starting tackle this season.
Mm-hmm.
In the case that Brian Bulaga just cannot do it anymore.
Yeah, and how old is Bulaga, do you know?
32, 33.
But that's what I was thinking. He's coming off that ACL injury. He refused to take the pay cut. I don't know where our next tackle's coming from, but I don't know if Bulaga's going to be able to hold up to a full season. He has not the last few years.
And the depth chart of the Packers offensive line right now is incredibly guard heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I know we saw McCray at tackle, but that's not an NFL tackle, folks.
No.
Justin McCray, no offense, man. You had a great year, but you're not a tackle. You are a guard.
He's a guard. And Spriggs, I don't know if we've seen enough out of him to count on him as a starting right tackle for a season.
Yeah, Spriggs and Murphy are both serious questions as to whether they'll play. And if you want to talk about, I mean, you can see the type, though. Spriggs, Murphy, Madison, Bakhtiari, you line these guys up. The Packers have an idea of what kind of athlete they want at their tackle positions.
Absolutely.
So we'll see if that pans out. It worked for Bakhtiari.
Yeah. And we got one of the best tackles in the NFL out of it. And that was a fourth round selection. So we'll see what Cole Madison can do coming out of the fifth round.
And I think we're going to need to take a break. The first, we've got one more five round pick, but fifth round pick. So there they are. Yeah, we need to take a break.
We got a lot to talk about. What picks are going on?
So we'll take a quick break. He's Matt Mellum Setter. I'm Mike Fleischman. I've been on vacation and I have a cold. So if I sound worse and dumber than usual, that would be the reason for it. But this is Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. It's our draft episode. We're talking about folks who have never played a snap in the NFL and just might not ever. So we'll keep talking about that when we come back. It's Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. We are back. It's me, Mike Fleischman. It's him, Matt Mellum Setter.
Hey.
I want to let you know that we have a Twitter account. It's at Cheesecagoland, which is spelled cheese. Cheesecagoland. Cheesecagoland. It's a better portmanteau than it is a spelling question.
We couldn't ask that in the spelling bee.
I am at MP Fleischman, MPFLEISCHMAN. You're just at Mellum Setter.
At Mellum Setter, which I think works great when you say it out loud.
Oh, it's good.
Because it's close to Matt. It's just at
Mellum Setter.
MELEMSETER.
Only E's in the last name. It's a good way to quickly get it right.
Boom.
Only E's, no double consonants, and you're on your way.
It's great.
Icebreaker question for section two of Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. What's the greatest concert you've ever seen?
Ooh, greatest man. I've seen a few. I saw Whitney, the Chicago band, in a basement for $5 before they released their first album.
Neat. I've never heard Whitney. Tell me about Whitney.
Whitney is, their first album's called Light Upon the Lake. Really, really, really well-reviewed kind of indie modern country album. And I watched, it's, their lead singer is their drummer, and there's a saxophonist, and there's strings, and it's just this weird, eclectic kind of reverence to old country.
Are they the band?
It's a band, yeah. It's a full band.
I mean, like, the band. I'm thinking of, like, Levon Helm and, like, the band from the 70s.
I don't know.
Oh, my God, you don't know who I'm talking about.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, my Lord. You might like the band.
Okay. I'm sure I'll love the band. But it was before they'd released anything, really. They'd released one single, and it blew up on, like, Pitchfork and Rolling Stone and all that. I had no idea who they were. Saw this concert, blew my mind, got home, Googled it. Their album was coming out like the next week, and it was unbelievable.
That is such a good way to see bands.
Yeah, just, it was in their house, too.
Neat.
It was in their basement. It's the guys from the Smith Westerns. I don't know if you're familiar.
I am.
Yes, it's those same guys do Whitney, and it was in their house, in their basement.
How about like the alt-country tradition out of Chicago, of all places? I mean, I know that if you go 30 miles south of here, you are essentially in the country music area of the world, but like this alt-country thing that, you know, like Sunvolt and giving way to Wilco and these projects. Like, how is that coming out of Chicago? And I don't mind.
I love it, but it's a weird place to come from, I guess. It's just, Chicago's such a weird city to be in because it is, you're right, 30 minutes outside of town, you just kind of hit nature and farmland. And Chicago is this big center of industry and everything, but so close to it is nothing.
I thought about this question, and I'll definitely check out Whitney. You have to listen to the band.
I'll add to my list of other music that I'm listening to. I put Gum in from this morning.
Yeah, they were Bob Dylan's backing band when he went electric.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, wow. A
project out of Canada. The Last Waltz might be the greatest concert film ever recorded. So just to let you know about that. I mean, like, this isn't even like me being an old man, because like, my dad would be into the band. There you go, the band.
Cool. The band.
Yeah, strongly recommend if country music and Americana and folk and rock are your thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this because I saw, definitely not my favorite concert, but I was at a concert this week. Sunday night, I went to see George Ezra with a friend of mine.
Right.
And I got no complaints about George Ezra. This was one of the more professional and well done shows that I've seen recently. I just, you know, that music isn't for me. I'm not going to like, you know,
I'm not
a convert. He is a British folk rock pop musician.
Gotcha.
And it's very pop. Like, it's pop first.
Okay.
You know, songs about like girls and the beach and everything.
Of course.
There are moments where it almost becomes country, but It was an interesting show because he had a 6-person band behind him. They were incredible.
Wow.
And they're very much like, they had a very interesting take on his recorded music, because there was a lot more drums and a lot more arrangement going on. And I thought it was well done. It's an incredibly well thought out thing. There's a very good musical mind working there in George Ezra. But the actual best concert I've ever seen was the Violent Femmes in 1999.
Wow.
In the Stevens Point Quant Fieldhouse. I believe it was 1999. Those were shaky years for me. So if y'all are Googling it being like, actually it was 1998. Good for you.
Those years don't matter.
Yeah,
it's a melding.
It doesn't matter. But the Violent Femmes played one of the most incredible 3-set nights that I've ever seen. Wow. Anywhere. And I will never forget that. It was about 85 degrees in that field house. Mm-hmm. I went with like 3 other people. They all like lost their endurance. I was the Violent Femmes fan, and they were just sort of like, yeah, we'll go to this concert with you. So I stood like just transfixed for like 3 hours while everyone else just sort of faded away into the background. And yeah, just a very Wisconsin kind of thing. Stevens Point, Wisconsin, one of Wisconsin's greatest bands. That whole like folk country thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's ironic that both of us.
Yeah, I'm a very
country thing.
I'm a very recent convert to it. I started listening to Whitney. I mean, that was freshman year, but started listening to Nick Drake very recently. I'm a big Nick Drake guy.
I was just recommending Nick Drake to the friend of mine that I went to George Ezra with.
Amazing, amazing recommendation. Nick Drake is incredible.
Mm-hmm. Go back through early Wilco.
I have not listened to very much Wilco already. I will.
Oh my goodness. Start with Yankee Hotel Foxtrot and work your way backwards into their first album. And there's so much good stuff there.
Ooh.
Yeah. You've got worlds to explore. It's a Green Bay Packers podcast where we talk about country music and the Chicago scene and my misspent younger days. We are in the middle of the fifth round. We get to the controversial part of the fifth round. Pick 172. It's punter J.K. Scott.
Yeah.
He's 6'6", 204 pounds. And this is interesting because I've read we both read some interesting thoughts on the idea of a finesse punter, of which J.K. Scott is very much touted to be a finesse punter. And there's a great article by... I'm going to get his byline here because I got to credit this dude. Paul Noonan at Acme Packing Company writes up about the case against the idea that a finesse punter is at all valuable in the NFL.
Yeah, it's he quotes in the piece, Noonan quotes a tweet that says that Johnny Hecker saves like 103 estimated points per season, correct?
Yep.
Which is more valuable than most running backs. No punter even comes even close to that. I mean, I think he's double or triple everybody else. The punter is, the finesse punter is such a strange thing.
It harkens back to a different era, I think, because I think we're finding out that it's very much like basketball, where once people realize that the percentage at which you need to hit three-point shots for them to be as efficient as the two-point mm-hmm. shots skyrocketed the amount of three-point shots taken. I think people in football are realizing that once you get the ball across the 50-yard line, you don't need to punt ever again.
Yeah, and the Green Bay Packers probably shouldn't, considering we have one of the greatest quarterbacks that has ever played football, who does the most electrifying things whenever it's called upon him. To have Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball on every fourth down wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, the distance and hang time are the only two things mm-hmm. that I've ever cared about in a punter. And you know, as soon as you get, you know, as soon as the Brett Hundley era begins in particular,
yeah,
you start to see why having a good punter who has a strong leg and who goes for distance above all things is valuable, because all of a sudden, instead of punting from the 30 or the 40 or those sort of things, you're punting from your goal line mm-hmm. because it's three and out time.
Yeah, it's three and out every possession time.
And yeah, so J.K. Scott, like, one, don't draft a punter.
Sure.
If you want me to be happy, just in general, stop drafting those guys. Two, don't draft the finesse punter.
Yeah.
Because, hey, the Raiders cut Marquette King.
He's available. He's around.
He's not a finesse punter.
No.
He's a kick ball hard punter. Those are the good ones.
And we also already had a punter on his rookie contract.
Yeah.
For cheap.
Yeah, Vogel is right there, and Vogel's a pretty darn good punter.
Pro Bowl alternate last year.
Yeah. No problems at all with him. So now J.K. Scott with a fifth round pick. And I guess, like, if you're looking at who's available at 172, if you know you're also picking at 174.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that is a pick that you can waste, because the Raiders at 173 took a punter.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, if you're looking at, like, who did we miss by drafting the punter at 172? Nobody, because at 174, you take Marquez Valdes-Scantling, a wide receiver out of Southern Florida, 6'5", 205. So two wide receivers come in, 163, 165.
Yeah.
Get the impression that the Packers are looking for something very specific.
Yeah, they're looking, and every one of these wide receivers that they drafted can also run. Jamon Moore ran a 4.6 at the combine, but ran a 4.49 on his pro day, and he looks much more like a 4.49 runner. He's fast in the open field. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is also very fast. I believe he ran a 4.49, maybe a 4.48. I might be getting his times mixed up with Equanimeous St. Brown. But these are all of the wide receivers the Packers took in this draft are fast guys, and Valdes-Scantling in particular will most likely be a gunner on special teams. I think we'll see him kind of take over the role that Jeff Janis played in, as that big, fast gunner that's tackling every punt returner. He's going to take some time to develop with his route running and everything, but he's one heck of a target.
So that's the final fifth round pick
mm-hmm.
for the Packers at this point. So the punters there, that's fantastic, but a couple of wide receivers are there as well. And then we get to round six. Scrolling. There we are, who you just mentioned. I'm going to call him EQ St. Brown.
Yeah, Equanimeous St. Brown. He's got a couple brothers that I think are playing in the NCAA right now. I don't want to say the Ball family of football, but a couple very talented younger brothers playing in the NCAA. Equanimeous St. Brown. He's 6'4" 3/4.
Well, you read these recaps of Jamon Moore,
yeah,
and then Valdes-Scantling, and then Equanimeous St. Brown. The lead sentence is always fast, tall, raw.
Yeah. Yeah. Big guy that can run.
Yep. And hey, how about like Michael Clark?
Yeah.
You know, already on the Packers bench. There's now, you know, with these three draft picks and then, you know, Michael Clark and also Geronimo Allison.
Geronimo Allison, 6'3".
There are five guys on the Packers right now who are all, the scouting report reads big, tall, fast.
Yeah.
Raw.
Yeah. Geronimo, I think, is over the last year or so become a better route runner than I think most people give him credit for. But you're exactly right. All of these guys are big. Michael Clark is 6'6". These are all guys that are big, can probably dunk a basketball with some pretty simple ease and can run like the wind.
Yeah, it's such a good thing to see, because I was ready to just sort of not explode, because that's violent.
Sure.
But I was ready to just like matter was going to run out my ears last year, pre Aaron Rodgers injury, watching Aaron Rodgers like sort of step around outside the pocket and look for that guy who is finally going to come open over the cross.
Yeah.
As like, I just wanted to sort of send him a telegram that was like, my dude, stop.
Yeah.
Do you remember that you have the strongest arm of anyone in the NFL?
Yeah.
Stop. Stop.
Yeah.
Because I've wanted him to chuck it down the field.
Yeah.
And I've wanted some height out there. Yeah, I don't want that pass going to Randall Cobb, you know, because he is
5'10",
a small man.
Yeah,
but just I want some 50-50 matchups. And you know, this to me, it brings into a bigger issue, is that I'm sick of the tabloid press telling me that, like, well, you know, it's because Aaron Rodgers needs to trust his wide receivers. Like, no, he needs to throw them the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to get open. And he needs to throw them the ball. That's what it is.
Yeah, and if it's a one-on-one situation, if you know the safety's going to come over late, you need to put up a 50-50 ball at him.
Yeah.
Got to do it.
Yeah. And these are guys that are going to be able to go up and get those 50-50 balls. These are guys that are 6'5" with a mega vertical and are explosive athletes who can go catch that ball.
Yeah, and this is a repositioning of the Packers' wideout philosophy, where you got the feeling that if it's Cobb and Nelson lining up, the prevailing thinking has to be like, we can't run these guys vertically all that often.
Yeah.
But if you're the Packers and you keep 6 or 7 wideouts active this year, which I'm assuming they keep 6.
Yeah.
And like 3 or 4 of them are that like raw, fast, tall. Like, you can send out some guys to push the field vertically a lot more. You're not saving.
Yeah.
Your lead guy to hopefully, you know, not have him blow out his knee again.
And with Joe Philbin returning to his offensive coordinator duties, he runs a more vertical offense. The last time he was in Green Bay, he ran a very vertical offense in like 2014. And we're going to hopefully see a lot more of these guys running those vertical routes, because these guys fit kind of Philbin's system. And hopefully we'll see Aaron Rodgers. I almost called Aaron Rodgers LeBron James.
Awesome.
I think that's just indicative of the space that they operate in my brain, which is two guys that carry their team on their shoulders all the time.
And are like mad cerebral.
And are crazy smart fellas. But yeah, hopefully we're going to see Rodgers throwing the ball deep a lot.
Running backs let you do that.
Yeah.
That's another thing, is that Philbin has to be looking at that running back depth chart going, hey, it's probably going to be 2nd and 4 a little more often this year.
Yeah.
If we run 3 running backs out there who are all legitimately good, risk taking becomes a lot easier.
Yeah.
When it's not 2nd and 11,
yeah,
or 2nd and 10 or 3rd and 7 all the darn time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If with guys like Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams that are pretty consistently picking up, you know, 4 or 5 yards a carry, it makes 2nd and 3rd down simple, and it opens up the play action game. There's very few people that are better in play action than Aaron Rodgers when he gets to that last step in his drop. And man, To see a full season of Aaron Rodgers playing with Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams.
Please, let me see it.
Oh, boy, I'm excited.
Please. I want to see it. It's going to make me so happy if it does happen. We're in the seventh round picks, which means that it's pure speculation. It's pure whoever the heck time. James Looney from California. If you want to talk about dudes what have good hair.
Yeah. Does he have good hair? I haven't looked at his hair.
It's large.
James Looney.
Yeah. Good large hairstyle.
Okay.
See if you can get that picture to come up. It looks about shoulder length. Has a certain, it's very full.
Does it flesh out? It folds out.
Very full.
I'm excited.
Yeah, it's some fantastic hair. Tall, somewhat lean interior D lineman with impressive athleticism. So same scouting report as the wide receivers. Tall, fast, raw. Needs to get much stronger in the NFL to deal with doubles and more powerful guards. Hands are light. Guys got light hands.
Sure. Do you know what that means?
No.
Okay, yeah, I also don't. Does that mean that his hands are strong, or are they quick, or are they not strong? Are they easily deflected by hand fighting?
Or are they just very luminous?
They glow.
Yeah, glowing hands. He's from the new Avengers movie.
Oh, he does have great hair.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm in on James Looney.
That's a hair draft.
That's a hair.
And, it's seventh round pick. How about a long snapper?
Yeah, we did draft a long snapper, didn't we?
And this is a thing where Brett Goode is clearly never not going to play in the NFL again. Major leg injury for Goode ended his season last year. So how about Hunter Bradley? There's nothing on him.
He's a long snapper. There shouldn't be.
Yep.
I'm sure no one scouted him this year for CBS Sports Mock Drafts.
Right.
He doesn't have a draft profile. I think last year we did have some struggles. The Green Bay Packers had some struggles with snaps and collecting the snaps for field goals. And J.K. Scott was the holder at Alabama, and Hunter Bradley's a long snapper. So Gutekunst must be very upset and tired of mishandled field goal snaps because he spent two draft picks on it. Spent a lot of draft capital.
Yeah, that is such an odd thing to do. But when you've already managed to get the guys you want, why not find someone in the draft? The punter you'll never explain to me in a way that's satisfactory. No. I'll be rolling my eyes at drafting a punter for it's like the Bucks drafting Aguayo. What did they draft him in? Where did Aguayo get drafted? In the third round or something?
Second round.
Oh my good Lord Jesus. yeah. Oh, bless
his
heart.
He's not on a team anymore, right?
No.
He's out of the league.
No, he came into the league and immediately started on fire and hasn't yet to be put out. That's, oh boy.
He's on the Chargers now.
Okay.
Yeah. Good for him, I mean.
But being able to get the guys you want and then say all right, let's bring in some of these other guys. I don't know that you wouldn't be able to sign Scott and Hunter Bradley, immediately after the draft,
I don't know
as undrafted free agents.
I don't know about Scott. I think Scott might have gone to, you said the Raiders took a punter right afterwards.
Yep.
I think Scott was kind of the number one punter in the draft, and so I think Scott might have gone right away to the Raiders. But man, we were definitely going to get Hunter Bradley, a long snapper, after the draft. It seems silly that someone would draft a long snapper, but here we are. The Green Bay Packers did. And we're still able to collect Equanimeous St. Brown in the sixth round, somebody that a lot of draft people saw going in the second or third.
Yeah, and that's what leads me to excuse it. And I want to be a Brian Gutekunst super fan.
Yeah.
I want to have the T-shirt that says "In Goot We Trust." But my dude drafted a punter and a long snapper in his first NFL draft. So it's always the matter of that little thing in the back of your mind, maybe not smart, but you don't know. And The final pick of the draft from the Southeast Missouri State Indians, it's Kendall Donerson, a linebacker. The CBS read on Donerson, supreme athlete who is extremely raw as an edge rusher. So 6'2", athletic, raw, currently doesn't have pass rushing moves. You'd think that those would be helpful. Yeah,
hey, glad we waited until our last pick to take a pass rusher who doesn't have any pass rushing skills. I would assume Donerson makes the roster just because of our lack of edge rushers on the roster. I'm sure we'll make some moves with undrafted free agents, and we'll get into that as training camp gets closer. I don't know anything about Donerson.
No, not a thing.
Yeah, I don't know a single thing. I know whatever you just read me.
And I just want to give a shout out before we kind of wrap it up to the final player, 256 pick taken in the draft, Trey Quinn, wide receiver out of SMU. How's it going, Trey Quinn?
Good job, Trey.
Good job. You got drafted in the NFL.
Proud of you.
Summing up the whole darn thing, Matt Mellum-Setter, the whole of the Packers draft, Gutekunst's first draft, a draft that I've had my eye on this one in particular because there were so many needs.
Yeah.
And there's so much frustration, so much unrequited energy from last season. Last season got going real strong. I'm so resisting making a sex analogy right now. Last season got going so well. Chemistry was so good. The candles were lit.
Yeah. There were flowers on the
dinner,
bed.
The dinner and the movie had both gone really well.
Yeah.
And then I made a sex analogy. And yeah, just there's so much of that, like, what? Now, leading into this draft. So how did it go?
I thought that Gutekunst had a pretty darn good first draft. I thought being able to pick up Josh Jackson in the second round was a great value. I remember talking last time about there being great value in cornerbacks in the second round. I think nailing Josh Jackson far exceeded any of my expectations. I think I like the Jair Alexander pick. I think more important than the Jair Alexander pick is picking up that second first rounder for next season, is the ability to now have two first round draft picks next season, which one of them has the possibility of being a very high pick that can be used on like a stud wide receiver coming out, a star. That first round pick is, I think, the biggest addition to our team.
Yeah, to me that's the defining thing, is that the Packers seem to have gotten exactly who they wanted.
Yep.
Known how to get it through trades, and trades are complicated in the NFL.
Yeah,
just want to put that out there, and that I don't understand them in the slightest. So being able to work that as a first year GM, that's why the Packers promote from the inside, is that they find guys who they know the technicalities of how all these things work, because this is stuff that, you know, as if you're running a fan podcast, you just sort of like you report on it of like, yeah, they traded down and then they traded up and they moved, you know, Randall for Kaiser. And I'm sure it was all very simple and it was just one phone call or something. There's probably like 600 pieces of paper involved in all the stuff that they managed to do with that.
Millions of dollars shuffling around every time.
Yeah, so that sort of movement and that sort of ability to get it done on draft day is real good. You know, being I'm not going to say gun shy. I'm making all the wrong analogies, but being being reticent is not how to draft.
Yeah.
So being able to do it and to be patient and to know that your guys are going to be there, because you know, clearly they knew what was happening. They knew that Alexander was their guy. They probably, you know, they had a feeling that someone was going to be there in the second round as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was well executed from a technical standpoint, and it theoretically addressed positions of need.
Yes, it did. We got the Green Bay Packers selected two good cornerbacks, which I would guess are both going to be our starting cornerbacks this season. Kevin King and Jackson on the outside, and Jair Alexander in the slot. I would assume that would be our top three cornerbacks, with the addition of Tremont Williams, Devon House. Those are small.
I would not be surprised to see House as a starter, at least for the first first bit of the season. Williams as well, possibly. I wouldn't be surprised if it was almost a full platoon
Sure.
back out there. Guys coming in and coming out and trying to trying to stay fresh and trying to adapt as it went. We saw Josh Jones do a lot of that last year, but yeah, the positions need got addressed. That was huge. A bunch of wide receivers. It telegraphs the Packers wanting to be aggressive on offense and aggressive on defense, which they weren't either.
No,
last year.
No, and have not been. I would not describe the Packers as an aggressive team for at least most of the last 3 or 4 years. McCarthy has seemed very complacent with offensive play calling at times, and I think Dom Capers was a very conservative coach towards the end there. This aggressive kind of turn is going to be fun to watch.
It will be. That is our draft preview episode. We'll do another episode soon enough. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a little bit of a lull in NFL happenings for a little while here. Yeah. So we'll think about coming back in another couple of weeks to do another one, taking a look at some undrafted free agents and probably just have a little fun. Talk about all the band you've been listening to.
Oh yeah.
Ooh. Catching up on that. Because it's a music and culture podcast that we occasionally mention the Green Bay Packers on.
Next week is fine art.
Yeah, next week I'll talk about the all the Vasily Kandinsky I've been enjoying recently, and maybe a little bit about architecture in case you wanted to unsubscribe from this podcast.
Cheeseheads in Chicago takes a trip to the Art Institute.
Yeah, Cheeseheads in Chicagoland goes on the architecture boat tour. The world of fine dining.
That's it.
Cheese in Chicagoland. Oh, okay. It's Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. Follow us on Twitter. We're at Cheesecagoland. Follow me on Twitter. I'm Mike Fleischman. I am good at Twitter. Just trust me on that one.
Twitter.
I'm pretty good at Twitter. I'm at MPFLEISCHMAN on Twitter. He's Matt Melumsetter. Follow him on Twitter at Melumsetter. Do you do Instagram?
I do Instagram. It's at Matt Melumsetter.
Okay.
I very rarely use my Instagram, so
I've been enjoying my Instagram. I'm at MP Fleischman.
You posted some good pictures of Fred the other day.
Oh, my cat!
Yeah,
oh, he's
cute,
so
little kitty.
Orange.
He's bright orange.
He's an old man too.
How old is
he? He's 11 years old.
Wow, go for it.
And he was in a real chilled out mood. So I decided to follow that up. But yeah, I like Instagram because. You know, Twitter is good if you have like a quip or something to say, if you have something real compact to say. But if you just want to like throw a picture out there, like Instagram filters just make me feel so arty.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, let me just put, get out my cigarette holder and my beret and like, oh, I put the Clarendon on this picture of my souffle. And it works out so good. But thank you for listening to Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. Thank you for bearing with me today as I've been sort of sick. And I don't know. I don't want to say less funny than usual, but but all the same. All right. For everyone here at Cheeseheads in Chicagoland, which is two of us.
All two of us.
Thank you once again to Radio DePaul Sports Studio for letting us use their fine equipment to record this podcast. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. This is Cheeseheads in Chicagoland. We'll talk to you later. And until then.
Stay cheesy, baby.
Baby.
podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.